All right, let's start with the prayer. Lord, I ask the Son of the Holy Spirit to give me the right words to speak and for everybody to be receptive to your message, Holy Spirit. We ask this in Father, in Jesus' name. All right. The first few slides are kind of neat, but after that, I guess. Pretty busy. Okay. Oh, I should ask you, what's the purpose of your life? I teach pre-confirmation. Yeah. And the two things that I ask the kids every class, what are the five steps in the Catholic Church? And what's the purpose of your life? And if that's the only thing you get out of class. Right? The purpose of your life is to look at heaven. So it's eternal happiness. In heaven, okay, eternal means in heaven, and on earth. Okay. To be happy here on earth. There are saints who have actually experienced that just on earth. Here on earth, even despite the bad circumstances. So you'd like to be in the top picture and not the bottom. The thing about happiness in heaven, we have to be happy here. We always are worried about losing. So if something's going to happen, that's going to make me unhappy. Right? But in heaven, it's secure. You'll be there, you have to worry about it ever changing. That will be happy all the time. So that's what we always like to have. Now, in Parsha today, you look at the theology, God and His actions, and the sacraments as their aids to us, surface of grace, okay, that help us get to heaven. Okay, starting tonight, it's going to be your reaction to God's plan. So now the focus, instead of being on God, it's going to be on you. Okay. To do that, we really need to know. Understand about human nature. We need to get the proper anthropology, which is what Pope Benedict XVI was part of. I assume that all of you have seen that picture before. Okay. You know, it's false. But this used to be down in the Museum of Natural History, and they took it out. Because they found out that the DNA of that last character is too different from the DNA of the next to the last character. Isn't that amazing? It was there for years. I remember doing it when I was a kid, seeing it in the Museum of Natural History. But it is, and people who have criticized it call it propaganda, and it's widespread propaganda. Now, John Paul II said that he actually believes in evolution. And what we have to believe about evolution is that doesn't mean that gorilla, suddenly became a human being, but that the soul, the human soul, was infused maybe in a gorilla that became the human being. Okay? In other words, we didn't evolve into human beings. Our bodies might have evolved into human being-like things, but we did not evolve. Okay? That God actually created us. The thing about this top thing is, I don't know if you've ever read any of E.F. Skinner's, like Walden 2, Beyond Freedom and Dignity. Those are extremely influential books written by E.F. Skinner, who was himself an atheist. Okay. That almost every teacher that you have, and are teaching our kids today, follow Skinner. When I was at the University of Delaware, and I used to sit on the other classes just for fun. And in the management class, they followed Skinner and how to treat people. And that's, you treat people like any other animal. There was nothing different about human beings. Yeah. That's why, and Walden 2 was a novel which really laid out what Skinner thought. His book, Beyond Freedom and Dignity, is not, okay? But he's saying that we're beyond freedom and dignity. We can't look at human beings, and this is like in this first chapter, as having any freedom and dignity different than their own. And in the management training course, okay? That's what they were saying, okay? No, they're not different. Yeah. And that's why we have people worrying about the baby seals instead of the baby humans. Okay. We don't see a difference. So it's pervasive. That whole idea is pervasive. The truth is, okay, that we are created with our own freedom and dignity, a human being. Okay, we're animals, but we're rational animals. We can reason, the other animals cannot. Now, Skinner just said, oh, that's because we're more intelligent. That's no. that you don't evolve into that. Okay. So we're made in the image and likeness of God. Okay, that means we have an immortal soul, intellect, free will. And that was, he said, proven philosophically. I said that was Aquinas. And actually, if you look at any other philosophical system that takes God out of it, the philosophical system is incomplete. Pope Benedict XVI said that they are inadequate to describe, these other godless philosophies are inadequate to describe the true nature of human beings. And I think that's really accurate. Okay. So we are actually products of love within the Trinity. Within the Trinity, you have three persons loving each other, and love is always productive. Okay. And so they produce human beings. It's nicely captured right here in this little thing. Calvin and Hobbes. Okay. It says, made in God's own image, just looking at this mirror, right? And Hobbes says, God must have a goofy sense of humor. I thought that was really great. That's a great quote, too. Calvin and Hobbes always great. All right. So, we have then vocation. We're being called to be good human beings. Your vocation to beatitude, to become saints in heaven, okay? And that, we can sense that. We have this natural desire to be happy. St. Thomas Aquinas explains that the people who commit sin, okay, choose bad things, do so because they think it's going to make them happy in the short run, and they forget about the long run. And so we have that really built into us. This desire to be happy, okay? So we'd like to be in paradise. We never there having to lose it. So in that, we're participating in God's goodness, okay? We're there just enjoying God's goodness while we're there. So it's our natural desire to want to take the road to heaven. However, we've been warned that the road to hell is wide and to heaven is narrow. You know, in fact, Jesus says, if you take it, of a narrow road. And this little picture here says, none taking it. And all the people are walking very casually off in their own direction. Okay. So we are actually designed for heaven. That's Adam and Eve, you know, were designed to go right to heaven, not die, not suffer, anything. Okay? They're designed for heaven. but we are free to choose hell. So we can actually act opposite to our design. Opposite to our nature. So we're called to be saints. Okay. So the question is then, what must you do to gain eternal happiness? Do you know what the gospel story is? Do you know what the gospel story is? The young man comes to Jesus and said, you know, what must they do to get to heaven or something like that? And Jesus said to him, follow the commandments. Right? And he said, well, I've done all those things. He said, oh, then sell what you have and give the money to the poor and come follow me. And the guy walks away. We're going to do that. And that's why Jesus said, it's harder for a rich man to enter into get to the gates of heaven than it is to get to thread
thread a camel through the eye of a needle.
The eye of a needle. Right. So that's. But we do have to obey the commandments and precepts of the church, the extensions of the commandments, and follow the beatitudes. The last thing is what the young man couldn't do: be detached from all that you have. Do you know that the Buddhist? The whole idea of Buddhism is to be detached from everything. Okay. Siddhartha, that was his whole idea. Okay. Every time I want something and I'm denied it, then I'm unhappy. Right. So he devised the system. He said, oh, well, if I don't want anything, I can't be unhappy. And that's what Buddhism, that's the thrust of Buddhism, is to do away with all of your desires. As John Paul II said, it's a dismal religion. They can't enjoy anything. Yeah. Buddhists, they know, they didn't see that very well, but anyway. Sometimes they don't know what their own philosophy is. Okay, so the morality, with the good and bad of human acts, right? You want to take the narrow route to heaven, the path to the right. And the rational animals die from heaven, okay? And we can act actually against our nature. So God gave us a free will, makes us responsible. We don't have a free will. Like cats and dogs don't have free will, so they're not morally responsible for what they do, okay? But God made us, so we can actually freely make the choice. He'll help us, okay? The evil part of our nature, or the devil, to try to keep us from doing what's good. But we have free choice. We always have that free choice. And that makes it so that God can reward us. If we didn't have a free choice, God couldn't say, oh, you came to heaven, you've been good. Now, we have a free choice. And we have a choice of being really good or bad. So it actually, having the free will makes it so that God can reward us. Has a reason to reward us. So he made us for heaven for our sake. Okay? Not for God's sake. He can't get any happier than he is. Okay? He made it so that he can share that happiness. Okay? But here's the problem. Heaven is not automatic when you fall. Okay? The old saying is, if you lose, you lose. Okay? So we don't get good at heaven by default. But if you don't get at heaven, where do you go? The default condition is not really a very good one. my two grandsons have lived with us, but quite a few of my grandsons, like my kids all practice Japan, but one not so well. But the grandkids is really a problem. Because they seem to act as if the default was happening. So if there's anything drastically bad, they'll get that out. Okay, so the acts are good. For an act to be good, the goal of it has to be good, the object has to be good, the intention has to be good, and the circumstances of it have to be good. So that's something to keep your eye on. Okay, but here's the problem with passions, okay? Feelings and emotions. And what I see from the kids that are being taught in public school, actually, when I was at the University of Delaware, I was sitting in philosophy classes, and in philosophy classes they were teaching there's no objective truth, okay, and so we just operate on our feelings. And that was 55 years ago. So that's what they were teaching, okay? And the people, the young kids that were in my class, they all came to be teachers, okay? So that's what they were. Okay, so it's really ingrained in all of you, unless you went to Catholic school, that's the truth. There's no objective reality. There's no objective truth. Okay, and so you just operate on feelings and emotions. And that is why today we're seeing the fruits of that with all the riots. Okay. They don't care about the data. Okay, they have riots instead. The liberals and the conservatives have riots, okay? Because they're just operating on feelings and emotions. It's a disaster, okay? But it gives us some idea of what the passions do. So passions are associated with the animal form. We're rational animals. We are animals, okay? But we have reason. So human beings are rational animals. And the feelings, passions, are associated with the animal part, rational animal. And they are inferior to the thing that makes us different from other animals, that is reason. Okay. So the passions, therefore, are inferior to the godlike rational aspect of human nature. So the passions are being controlled by our emotions are being controlled, and then being controlled by our reason. We really need to be reasonable. I'm an engineer, so I love the science. And think, wow, that makes sense to me. I like data. I want the proof of the data. One of the things that, and I don't hear it very much anymore, is should we vent our emotions? It used to be the psychologist would say, you're going to explode. If you hold your emotions in, you're going to explode. Have you ever been told that kind of thing? That you're going to go crazy if you hold your emotions in? Yes, you have. So they're still doing that. Okay. That isn't true, okay? I'm not sure. There are two things that the church recommends. One is diversion, okay? So if you're getting emotional about something, that switch off to something else. Okay. Put that aside and forget about it. Okay. Sublimation is another one. Okay, sublimation means that you might say, you don't have to change yourself, but you can just inundate yourself with good ideas. Okay, and that represses it. So the church says, you don't have to repress those emotions. Okay. Some emotions are good. Some emotions make us do good things. But so we're talking here about sublimating bad ideas. And the old adage is still true. I don't think it's the devil's workshop. So one way of sublimating is to get busy. Get busy doing good things. Okay. You don't want to snooze. So to control yourself, okay, you just keep busy doing good things. So you can act in the church, you can go, right? In the Bible, you can do all kinds of things, right? And do those good things, but such as that you can crowd out the bad ideas. Fortunately, we have jobs, right? We'll have to work, so that also helps with that. Yeah, that keeps us busy. Okay. So the conscience enters into this, okay? Because we have to make a judgment whether something's right or wrong. That means we have to really learn what's right or wrong. Yeah. Get advice, okay? And it's not a small voice. It's a decision. Okay? Now, you make the two aspects of that, okay? I make the decision, let's say that's the wrong thing to do, but then on my free will, I said, I'm going to do it anyway. Or I can say, I'm not going to do it. Right? So there are two things. Conscience tells you whether it's right or wrong, and then with your will, you decide whether or not you're going to go the bad way or the good way. Okay. However, you have to always obey your conscience. So if your conscience says that it's okay to do it, then it's okay to do it. What that means is that how you form your conscience is really, really important. So a guy that, you see this, the story, I guess, in Winchester, it was a woman drowned with four kids. Like, she said, well, God told me to do that. Okay. Well, the problem was not that she drowned with four kids, but how did she get to the point where she thought that was good? Right? How did she form her conscience about that? So we have to really, really work on forming our conscience correctly. First, sources from the church, the commandments, the precepts, the Bible, good books, holy people. In the notes, I have two books that I really like. One is by O'Connell, which was applied actually to medicine, but it's a fantastic book on morality, moral principles. I think very, very well explained. Applied to medicine, but the first part of the book is general. You can apply to anything. I really recommend that. And then the one that I used back in Villanova is by Fagathy, which I still like. Okay. Because they have a lot of common circumstances, not medicine. The two difficult issues are the ends justifying the means and cooperation and evil. Ends justifying the means. The person's agonizing in great pain and ready to die. Okay? And so we're tempted to put him out of his misery. We do other animals. We send them off to the vet to get euthanized. You say, well, okay, I'm going to have to kill this person. They're suffering so much, it's better for them if I put them to death. Okay. That's how we can look at the means, trying to justify the end. Okay. Yes, the person better off, but not let them kill. So the man says that, so I'm not kill. That's a difficult issue. That's not just about me. Cooperation and evil is another thing, and that is, so what you're working with, doctor's office and the doctor's done abortions, how much are you cooperating with that? Who's doing abortion? So, and that's a huge gray area. But Donald's book does a really good job on that, especially when it comes to things like abortion and medicine. But there are a lot of hard cases to figure out. I'll give you some ideas how to handle that. The other thing is that you have an erroneous conscience. Okay? Lax means that you think that nothing you do is evil. So there's always that little optical illusion there. And believe it or not, all those characters are the same type. I've studied that. That can't be. That last one, maybe the first three are, but that last one certainly is not. That is definitely bigger. It isn't. I measured it because I really couldn't believe my eyes, and it's exactly the same as the first one. Okay. So that happens with our conscience, okay? First one, lacks conscience, okay? That we have this illusion that it's okay. That'll be okay. Not bad. Okay. It can happen by becoming steeped in sin. Your conscience can get work if you are being consistently sinful. Okay. Then your whole perspective is messed up. But another thing that is very common today is called psychologizing of sin. I think of Putin invading Ukraine, okay, is doing some really evil things, right, that everybody recognizes as evil. Right. And instead, I hear on the news that they think he's insane. They would never think that he's chosen evil, but rather he's insane. And boy, that happens a lot. Okay. You listen to it as you listen to the news, or you're just talking in a conversation. Anybody that's doing something bad, they say, "Well, it must be because he was raised in a bad environment." So it's just a psychology of screw-up. Not his conscience, right? So that is an extremely dangerous thing. Discussing with Father Kleinman, I don't remember the situation too much, but of a case, and he actually said, that person, or it was a hypothetical person, it wasn't any person, but maybe the person was brought up wrong, something like that. I said, psychologist, and I see. Wait a minute, food court, I'll talk about that. Okay, so that's one thing. You have to be careful that you don't become too permissive with yourself. Okay, scrupulous is another one. This is the one that the devil likes the most. Okay, where you think that nothing is good because you become very quickly so discouraged, I can't be good, so I give up. Actually, my father-in-law was scrupulous. He would not go to communion without going to confession like an hour before. He had really a lot of trouble with psychological problems because of that. When he tried to drink it, he was trying to get him out of it, got him out a little bit, but he really had trouble not being scrupulous. So it's really something that does happen, for sure. It's primarily caused by pride and maybe skepticism. And just, think I'm so bad, I can't get it out. But it can become pride. Okay, that my standard for myself is so high that I can't get to it. So that's another. This is the opposite of wax. Okay. Another thing is you can have an ignorant or doubtful conscience. Okay, which means you can't figure out whether it's right or wrong. When I was a teenager, when I started dating girls, I couldn't figure out what was right or wrong. Okay. And everybody was in that last state back down there. Okay. So you need to get advice. Right? Okay. You have to resolve the doubt before acting on it. Fortunately, I had a professor. I go to confession every week. And I really might identify myself and say, Father, I can't figure out what I'm allowed to do, what I can't do, what I'm allowed to do, okay or not. Okay. And he worked through that about 6 months, and after 6 months, I was fine. Yeah, 5 months since then. So that's the way to do it, basically. I don't know why, as a kid, I did that. Somebody must have told me that's what I should do or something. So instead of harping on the sin of things, it's kind of a good idea to harp on virtues, of doing good. Get busy doing good things. A virtue is the habit of doing good, which means you have to keep doing good, okay? The same good kind of thing. And then you get in the habit of doing it, and it becomes a knee-jerk reaction. Okay? So if you work on, let's say, not losing your temper, okay? And you keep doing that, right? You will gradually do that. So if somebody irritates you, instead of flying off the handle right away, okay, now I've gotten this habit of just taking a try. So it's just developing really good actions. So this is what I like. To avoid evil, be busy with practicing virtues. The virtues are, there are four categories of virtues. These are categories that even nations like prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. Prudence, making wise decisions. Justice, being fair. Fortitude, being courageous. Temperance, being moderate. Okay. Everybody thinks those are all good. Even an atheist thinks they're all good. But they're categories. You could any other virtue you can categorize under those. But then we have, the Catholics have a theological virtue. Anybody has religion has theological virtues. Okay, these are virtues that relate to God. And they take those four cardinal virtues and take those virtues to make them supernatural. For the atheists, they're just natural. Okay. And for people who do these things for God and make wise decisions for God's sake, okay, that makes them supernatural. And there's our faith, hope, and charity. Okay. Believe in God, looking forward to heaven, love God, neighbor, and charity. Okay. So those things raise those things. Those things convince the reason we're doing those wise things and the wise virtues now supernatural. And God helps us, right? God helps us do those things. Actually, under all circumstances, a good picture is that we sit on a fence, and the devil's point is one way, and God's point is the other. And the poles are equal, the choice is ours. So God is giving us all the grace we need to overcome that devil, okay? And we have a free choice in which way to go. So the help he gives us is the foundational ones of baptism and confirmation, the sustaining ones of penance and for the Eucharist. And when you get confirmed, okay, you will be given the gifts of the Holy Spirit, wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, which will all help you make good decisions before we get your conscience. So, well, this is, I'm going to skip over this. Too much reading there. But this is an explanation of each of the gifts that are in the, they're in the notes, too, so let's skip over that one. On the other hand of it is misbehavior, okay, sin. Sin is an offense against God. We have to say, well, I sinned against my neighbor, that. That's kind of not right. I may have offended my neighbor. I sin against God. So sin is not doing what God does. Do you hear that? That is what it's doing is, and this is a very common thing that have happened. I always think of the Hail Mary pass. The Hail Mary pass, right? So everybody knows what that is. Okay. When we think of Hail Mary, think of Hail Mary, the grace. And what they've done is taken that prayer and made it just, you know, a byword for a desperation past. Okay. So they've taken a religious thing and made it commonplace. And that's what they've done with sin. And it's hard when the whole world is doing it to think, no, wait, that's not quite right. So sin is an evil act. It's an offense against God. Okay, and a repeated sin, just like repeating good things, leads to virtue. Repeated bad things leads to vice. So now your knee-jerk reaction is to do the wrong thing. So those, you don't want to keep repeating that. you don't have that kind of a habit. So in the categories of sins, there are seven here. You need a little picture over there of them. And there are four that
kind of interesting. Because there seems like God to have interventions. This really, that idea comes from the Old Testament. We see it in Cain and Abel, the story of Cain and Abel. Okay? When God, Cain kills Abel, okay? God says to him, even the earth was crying to me to punish you for that. So there, those four things taken from, well, I don't know if they're all from the Old Testament, but the burden that I was wondering if your family was going to do. So those are really bad ones. So habitual misbehavior, and how do you get over it? Okay. So vice is the habit of doing evil. That means it's contrary to being on the way to heaven. Okay. A good way to recover the device is to practice the opposite of virtue. I'll show you the list. I hope that's in the notes. One of the things I found recently that I was really being challenged about being impatient. I've never done this before. But then, here I am at 86 and I finally tried something that I've been told to do a long time ago. And that's this nightly exam. I wasn't really having a lot of trying circumstances, like daily. But what I would do is at night, I'd say, I was impatient again. Okay, let's see. Okay. All right. I resolve tomorrow I am not going to be impatient. In the morning, you come along and say, okay, my resolution last night was to not be impatient today. Okay. And actually, I broke the habit. About 3 or 4 days. I still didn't be impatient, but it wasn't like every day. So I did break the habit by doing that. And I did other things too, okay? But I focused on that one, and that worked. I prayed too. I had a lot of help. That's what I prayed about. Another thing is frequent confession. Because when you go to confession, you resolve the sin no more. So that's like you do at night. Okay, I was doing it at night. You definitely should be doing that confession. And when I was a teenager, I did identify myself. When I think back a little, I think, man, that was crazy. I was doing that. I was like 16 years old, just going into the priest and saying, this is Fred. Okay. And there were times when he said to me, he knew that. Open every week, every week, every week. And he said, I forget your story. Can you tell me it again? So I feel frustrated. But it was worth it. He got me out of that. He really did. And you know that when that was done, when I was finally out of that, he was transferred to California. It's like an angel, right? That God put him in order. He was new in the parish. It was like God put him in the parish to get me straightened out. And as soon as I was straightened out, he transferred out. It was a remarkable thing. I never thought of that at the time. But thinking back on it, I thought, amazing. Okay, so these are the vices and the corresponding virtue. Obviously, pride, the opposite of that is humility. In public schools, they really emphasize self-esteem. Okay? I do that for self-esteem. I have a lot of fun with the kids in the confirmation class on that. What do you mean? I did this big project, but, I really build up my self-esteem. I said, yeah, that was pride. You understand? That was pride. If you didn't have, you wouldn't have that ability if God didn't give it to you. So if God did not. I visited a guy in the university one time about this. This guy had been, I told you the story about previous class, but the guy had been shot. He was being robbed. He was robbed. Did I tell you the story before? And he was walking away, and the guy shot him. He pulled a blast in his neck. He's paralyzed from here on down. And he's been that way now for over 20 years. Okay. He can do nothing for himself. Okay. He can talk, but he has to be fed, or he can't move anything. He is the most humble person I've ever met. He's not a Catholic, he's a Baptist. And anytime he does something good, which you can't do much of. But he just writes a birthday card, spreading the computer with his mouth and all. I said, God, boy, Jeff, that was really nice. He said, yeah, God really helped me there. Always give the credit to God. Always, absolutely. I've never heard of it. Take credit for himself. It's always to God. That's how we should be. That's how I should be.
I didn't do enough good stuff, though. It's not a problem. So you can look this up, I think, on the internet, unless it's been purged out. But you can be opposite. Virtues. I'm not sure if this is the right thing.
So sins can be serious. It can be. Yes. You can say they can be minor. I thank God just in a minor way. It's like thanking your mother. You know. Well, gee, that wasn't so bad. I didn't really insult you that much. If that's what you're doing with a venial sin. But some sins are deadly, and that's in the letter of John. That's really turning away from God. Okay, it's like violating one of the commandments directly, like murder. Okay, example is murder. Okay, that's turning your back on God. Then you're doomed for that kind of thing. That's the best picture I've ever seen in the film before. But for a sin to be mortal, to really be deadly, first of all, it has to be a big thing. It has to be serious. It has to be a grave matter. You must realize that it is. Okay. And then you must do it anyway. It's like I like to say is that it's bad. I know it's bad. I do it anyway. Here's your way of saying this. Remember that.
Yeah. So then you're in trouble because you really have offended God greatly at that point.
There's kind of a curious thing about that, and that is that if I thought walking through that door was a serious matter and against God's will, okay, then my conscience is wrong. Right. If I follow my conscience, though, okay, and I know it's walking through that door is going to separate me from God, and I do it anyway, okay, that's the moral sin.
Even though walking through the door is not bad, but my ideas are so mixed up that I think that it is, right, then that's why it's very important for your conscience, probably.
Okay. Venial sins are minor things, right? One of those three things is missing, okay, from the going against God's laws. Okay, so those sins are called venial sins. They're sins that are not mortal. Okay, and they're injurious though. They do weaken your will. They will never become a serious sin. Okay, it was never serious. It's always minor. Okay? It doesn't add up to being serious. But they do weaken your will. It makes you less resistant to the temptations. So they're bad. And if, two types of venial sins. The worst being deliberate. Okay, just saying that. What can you do this morning?
I'm going to steal this Lego pencil.
Okay. I come in the next day, I'm going to steal a pencil again. I like this. I'm going to steal a pencil every day. Okay. That's a deliberate venial sin. It's not a big thing. Okay. But it's a deliberate one. Okay. That's worse than when I'm impatient. Something happens to me. Okay, and I bubble up in an impatient. Okay, because that's more emotional, you know, like a spontaneous venial sin. I didn't plan to lose my, I didn't plan not to lose it, and I lost it anyway. So these deliberate ones are the ones you really, really need to break yourself of. Okay, you can work on the other ones, but these are the ones you have to really be careful of. Of course, the intention to sin is a sin. So, and then to rob a bank, I'm driving a bank to rob it, okay, and the car breaks down, they never get there. Okay. Well, you won't go to in prison for that, okay? But God will still hold you responsible for robbing the bank. So, and the one that is the most common, of course, is lust. Yeah. Lusting after. Yeah. So that's the one that is frequently, is the one we're most prone to, I'd say. Is having thoughts, lustful thoughts. So just keep busy. Solve math problems.
As an engineer, that's what I do. I still do that. I love data and data analysis and all. So I keep my mind caught on that and try to block out all the others.
So this is the problem of cooperation and evil. So the range of cooperation is it can be direct, it can be proximate, which means close to it, or remote. direct operation, you know, for example, the doctor performing abortion and you're handing the instruments to do it, okay? That's direct operation. You're advancing abortions. That's advancing abortions. Okay. Proximate is the one that is really hard to figure out. How close am I to contributing to the abortion? That becomes much more difficult. And remote would be somebody who comes in and I things up in the room where the abortion was performed. That's not a sin. And there's nothing to do with it. So kind of a rule of thumb you can say is that it's okay if it doesn't contribute to the actual sin problem. But there are really a lot of complicated cases. It is really, it's a mess. This would have worked way Adonis is really good. But of course, I had there the German soldier. Because in World War II, there were a lot of cases like that. I think you knew Olive, like you was. He claimed he was just following orders. Yeah. Israel and many things. We did not have to, in fact, we're not allowed to follow. They didn't want to work. And it was even understood that in international law. In fact, it was in the, what's the guy's name? The George Floyd case, right? There was cooperation even right there. Okay? So, how much was. Do they cooperate on the guys that didn't do anything? It's complicated. There is an unforgivable sin. God is all merciful, he wants to forgive you. However, if you don't ask for forgiveness and you don't repent of sin, God is not going to forgive you. He's not going to forgive you when you don't want to bless you. So he'll only bless you. The only unforgivable sin is the one that you don't want to have forgiven. God's mercy is infinite, okay? So you just have to be really sorry, okay? And God's design is mortal sins, serious sins, have to be forgiven in confession, or by perfect contrition. If you really love God greatly, you can be forgiven of sin. But part of that is that, and I'll get the confession as soon as I can, you can ask, you know, why did God do that? My older son told my younger son, he was complaining about one confession. He said, I'll just tell God I'm sorry. And that's the same thing. You know, my older son said to him, there's about a 15-year difference. He said to him, well, okay, do this. Okay. Do that. Say, God forgive me. He said, okay. And then go to confession. And when you're done confession, come out and tell me that we're the same. He said, no. Okay. We need some physical reinforcement of what we're doing. Human beings, okay? You get married, you do wedding rings, you give people flowers, okay? You write cards, you do things like that. Because we need, human beings need that physical aspect of that and confession for us. So when we go to confession, when the priest says you're absolved, you're absolved. And so we have that physical reinforcement. Okay, so, there are community aspects of sin. No sin is private. You can say, well, see, I'm going to go in my little padded cell and lock all the doors so I can't do anything else and I'm going to get drunk. I'm just by myself. I'm doing it. That's still not private sin. That's still a sin. But it is, of course, what you've done with that is I made myself unavailable to somebody else who may need my help. I'm telling back with you, I'm just, bailing out. And it's your problem. Okay? So no sins are private. Same way, anything you do good helps a fellow community go to church. Okay? Anything you do bad hurts the community of the church. We're all part of the mystical body. We're all part of Christ's church. It's called the mystical body of Christ. In the civic society, right now, there's quite a controversy on what is the. The church has some books that are called social moral principles. nice thick book because it's sort of basically complicated. But anyway, totalitarianism, communism, okay, is really contrary to dignity because what it's doing is it's saying that the government is going to control everything you're doing. You know, what you're going to eat, where you're going to work, where you're going to live, okay, everything. Socialism is contrary to human freedom because you can't start your own business. And socialism, we tend to talk these days, when I was a kid, communism was one thing, socialism was another thing. Now, okay, because they know that communism is a very bad thing, the communists call it socialism. And socialism was originally defined, what it meant is that the government owns all means of production. You couldn't start your own business. Okay. Anything that produced any goods was under the government. So that stops human freedom. So that means all the farms were owned by the government. Well, the farmer working on a farm that belongs to the government is not very interested in producing much as a care. And that's why they had a lot of trouble with that in the USSR. And then President Pope really has attacked capitalism, saying that it fosters greed. And of course, that's what all the socialists say. This fosters greed, right? That's what they say fair capitalism is. You just let capitalism go by itself. And that is what Pope Francis experienced. Well, he actually was pruning capitalism in Argentina. So his view of capitalism is very much influenced by what he saw with pruning capitalism. Okay. We have pruning capitalism here in these days. And I'm not sure that we've always had it, but I've become sensitive to the fact that we have. Okay. That means that the rich people all get real work, get richer and richer and richer. In fact, I think the United States is really heading very much towards totalitarianism. What's happening is they're gutting the middle class. They're raising taxes, and the rich people, taxes are a small part of it. The poor people are living on welfare, and the people in the middle class are getting cut down to go up there because they're being taxed down to go up there. I look at the data, and I see that happening. I have a little chart of how to show. The idea, what does the best society have? The problem is original sin makes utopias impossible. So utopia means impossible. It can't be done. And that's the problem. Okay, so if you have a benevolent ruler, let's say, okay, that's good. Okay, you have a really nice society, and then when he goes, the next guy comes in, well, eventually, and if you think about it, the guy that gets to the top is usually the most ruthless. So eventually you got a bad guy up there. Right? Okay. And why is that? Okay, because of original sin. Because we all tend to sin. Okay. And so you get a guy up there who commits good sins, basically. And it looks like Putin's of that category right now. But we're all part of the civic society and really must participate in that civic society, which I mean, a society that basically could, which available, be it possible for people to do it. I am very active politically. Okay, so we all work for the common good. Okay, so civic society should promote the common good. The common good means that respect for everybody as human beings, okay, for our freedom, our intelligence, okay, and it needs to be a society that fosters our living according to our good nature, okay, among God's rules. So, for example, a law that says that the doctor must perform abortions, otherwise he will be certified. Okay, that's inherently evil, right, and contrary to the freedom of the doctor to do us like that. So, we can't. That is not a characteristic of society. And we want peace and security. So would be the common good in the case of that direction. Social justice has gotten a bit. Glenn Beck says if an organization is for social justice run the other way, or anybody's after social justice, yeah, that's not true. Social justice is in a lot of the books, the Catholic morality books. Such as should support the virtues, discourage vices. Okay? It should support the dignity of human beings, okay, their intellect and free will. That is a just system. Think against justice, even if there's personal resolution. Okay? The Catholic social principles really brought on the principle of subsidiarity. Not only that, there's an interesting one is Lindsey Graham said that we need something to assassinate Putin, right? That will solve the Ukrainian problem, right? Okay. So if assassinating Putin is going to cause chaos in Russia, that would be a bad thing. Okay? That's when the evil guys take over, right? And so the Church has always said we should not overthrow a government. Now you look at the United States formation, right? Well, we didn't really overthrow the government. The American Revolution, we replaced it. We had a government here, so when we kicked England out, we had a government. We didn't have that chaos. So that was, you might say, a war of independence, not a revolution. Although we called the revolution a war, it really wasn't. The principle of subsidiarity is interesting. We look at schools and what they're doing in public schools, and teaching the kids in public schools, and so they have parents of brilliant. Getting up in arms about basically is instituted by the state of Virginia, and also by the publishers, and what they hear from the kids in public schools. The principle of subsidiarity says that decisions like that need to be made at the lowest level. And what that means is the lowest level of government. So the parents should be able to control what's going on in the school, their school, where their kids go. Not in some school. So the principle of subsidiarity says that the decision should be made at the lowest level of government possible. Yeah. So these are the things you can read about when you look at the Catholic social principles. They really are approaching. So the participation in social life then, so we're members of civic society, we need to promote the common good, we need to keep informed, we need to obey the laws. There's no surprise, isn't it? Good definition. Okay. The Church says we have to obey laws, okay? St. Thomas Aquinas says, a law is an ordinance of reason instituted by proper authority for the common good and properly promulgated. So a law that says that a doctor must perform abortions and certify, okay, that's an ordinance, that's not a law, because it doesn't satisfy this law. It's definition of law. That's not St. Thomas Aquinas. We go around it. Okay? It was not for the common good. Therefore, it is not a law. You don't have to obey. Okay, so we need to go influence the government. Okay, that means you need to vote, you need to advocate, and run for office. It's a problem with running for office. Getting good people to run for office. Advocating, I really am very much involved in the political process from a grassroots point of view. These petitions come around on the internet. We get one a day at least for various causes. And most of the time, you just click and click and click and you get something legislative petition. I'm not sure what this stuff was my name on, but anyway, I do that because it's been great and easy. Nobody's knocking at my door yet. So, so the civic morality, the social justice. Can be between two individuals, so we make sure that the laws are that way, that it's fair, that we're distributive, that it is an individual society, we take care of the poor, and things like that. So, for example, the dignity of man requires equal education, not equal outcome. If you go to schools and say, wait a minute, you say that blacks don't perform as well as whites, therefore, obviously, there's some injustice going on there. Because what the school is saying is that when the black, average black, of course there are plenty of black ones who are better than the white ones, but it's called on averages. Okay. So you're saying that when the average black scores are equal to the average whites, then that's justice. Okay. That's equal outcome. I looked at all the schools in Virginia, they say, Fairfax County schools are so great. Okay. So I looked at the ones that are down in the Southwest, places that were really poor, And you know, a lot of the coal miners and you know, very little education and everything. And they found out that the schools in Fairfax County are exactly the same as the ones down there. My criticism I got was, yeah, down there are only, you know, about 50% of students take the SATs. That's what we use to measure. And up here, it's like, you know, 75%. I said, if the people down there do the SATs, okay, do well, it's because they had the opportunity. It's like the same opportunity, okay, they didn't take advantage of it. Okay, but that means it's available to them if they can do just as well. What happens in Fairfax County is really interesting. We have so many Asians that do
so well.
The scores are higher because of that. You do a correlation on the basis of the four categories that they report, Asian, white, black, and Hispanic. And you see that, for example, if you don't include Asian, the correlation is terrible. But if you put Asian in the mix, the correlation is better. So that's equal education. Equal employment opportunities, obvious. I mean, these are pretty obvious things, okay? We show them the same opportunity. Equal remuneration, this is one of the sins that Christ had for vengeance, essentially. We don't pay the people what they deserve. Distribution of goods, we need to pay the work. There are some people that actually can't work. So we have an obligation to take them. We have to do something. Okay, so the rules to be on that narrow road to heaven, okay, are several. One is natural law, and that should be available to everybody. That should be the reason. That picture is a picture of Joe Biden and Ted Kennedy, who were grilling Judge Thomas when he was a candidate to become Supreme Court justices about natural law. They wanted to be sure that you would not use natural law in any of his decisions. These are two good Catholic men. Okay, well, Judge Thomas at the time was Episcopalian, became Catholic on their own, but it was outrageous what they were doing. Absolutely. The problem with the natural law, okay, we can do stuff from our nature, okay? Our destiny is to heaven, okay? We have free will, we have intelligence. Okay. Atheists have no destiny, so it's a little problem with natural law by atheists, because they don't really have a goal. Their goal is a little pile of dust. Right? So it's a little problem there. Yeah. But the natural law is used from our nature, right in anthropology. It's universal and permanent. In fact, C.S. Lewis says his proof of existence of God is based on the fact that he finds the same laws deduced from nature that every society in the world. Okay? And he said, see, that's got to become someplace else, and it's becoming from God. And he uses that as a definition. And they're all reasoned through. So they're all reasonable and have the passions under control. Okay, well, some people say, wait, it's natural to sin. No, it's not. Okay, no, it's not. It's common to sin, but it's not natural to sin. It's against our nature to sin. So it might be common, but it's not natural. Okay. This was an analogy somebody gave me. Sin is to human nature as darkness is to light. Darkness is not part of light. So sin is not part of our nature. Just like darkness is not part of light. That was a pretty deep analogy. All right. So in addition to the natural law, we have divine law. Okay. They mean from Revelation. Okay? The thing is that we need divine law, we need guidance from God, because we get our moral decisions get obscured by our sinful acts. Okay? We can rationalize our actions. So in the old law case, we had the Ten Commandments, they moved to some 13 laws that they had. In the new law, Jesus came, kept the Ten Commandments. But repealed the 613 little things like washing hands before you eat, things like that. Okay. The church has added precepts to the church as a more or less as an elaboration of the third commandment. Okay. We also have the institution of the attitude, which is to love our neighbor, love God,
So these thoughts, so God really helps us because left on our own, we don't think much. But if you think how the world was when Jesus came, okay, where it's all tribal, and all the battles going on, and everything, that that's what happens with that thousand revelation. And since then, yeah, it's, in fact, I'm not sure what the highlight was, but of course, the first one. Okay, so here's a summary of all. So the purpose of your life then is to gain and secure happiness. This is the last slide. In the next place. Okay. So it's we're operating on the gifts that God gave us, and like, well, aiming for secure happiness in heaven. We have God first on the road to heaven, far, right? We have the cardinal theological virtues, which are not on the civic obligations to work for the common good. And then we have the side roads. Well, that doesn't look much like a side road. That was like the main highway that's everywhere going down. That was what we bring into sin. And so we have the rules. We have the natural, those we deduce from our nature, therefore our natural laws, and we have the divine laws to help us. And part of that is to properly form our conscience. Jesus warns that it's the road to heaven is narrow, but if you take it, one of the most remarkable homilies I've ever had. I've only remembered three homilies I've had in my life. And one was my father Mercer, who was St. Timothy's, who belonged to that parish, who probably formed this one. And the top of the homily was, "Are few saved?" And he went through the Bible showing that, you know, few are saved. And I was sitting there in the pew saying, I better get on the stick. I better start doing something. That had a huge impact on my life, that on my defense. All right, so next, the upcoming RCI sessions, we'll work on the divine law. As you go through the Ten Commandments and things like that, to elaborate on so you can help you form your conscience. You made it. I guess that. Okay, any questions? Anybody want to ask a question for one of them? I think the write up is better than the presentation. That's it. For all the gifts that you give us, the church, the guidance that we have from it, the direct revelation to us, and the constant call to us to come back to you, and the sorrow for our sins, and the constant strive to lead a virtuous life. We ask this in the Father in Jesus' name. Thanks for your endurance.
Thank you. Have a good week.